Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing lawyers for global challenges.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. What's it like to be poor in this recession? If you have to ask, you haven't been there. What startles writer Barbara Ehrenreich is an almost cruel indifference in the land, in banks and collection agencies, local ordinances, and more. Hotel housekeepers Lucine Williams and Angela Norena know exactly what she's talking about. Both just lost their jobs to workers earning half their pay and no benefits. This hour on Point, the working poor and recession, with champion of the lower rungs Barbara Ehrenreich and two women a hard economy has just pushed to the edge. In a few moments, we'll be joined by Lucine Williams and Angela Norena, hotel housekeepers, recently fired with mass layoffs and rock-bottom wage replacements at the Hyatt Hotel Corporation. But first, Barbara Ehrenreich joins me from Washington, journalist, author. She's for many years worked to describe the real lives and daily struggles of the millions of Americans who are working poor or just poor. Best known for her bestseller, Nickel and Dimed, for which she went undercover from 1998 to 2001 in a series of low-paying jobs to see what it's really like. She has a new book coming out shortly called Bright Sided. We'll talk about it. And since June, she's written a series of pieces for the New York Times on how this recession has affected the poor and working poor around the country. Barbara Ehrenreich, welcome back to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Oh, good to be with you, Tom.
So everybody's, you know, yelling and yelping in this recession. The rich, you know, having to, I don't know, sell off a yacht. The middle class definitely nervous about their jobs and making ends meet. How do you see it in particular hitting the poor, the working poor, Barbara?
Well, I thought this was sort of a mystery at first when I first approached this question several months ago, because there was so little in the media about it. You know, the media stories really, to be a little bit sarcastic about it, did, you know, kind of focus on the rich person who's had to cut back her personal trainer to 2 hours a week, you know, because of hard times and terrible sacrifices like that. But and that's, you know, that's news. I mean, that's all right. That's something new. But I want to know, well, what happened to the 25% of Americans who were in the category of the working poor in the best of times? So that's what I set out to research. And, you know, for some of them, I have to say the answer was like, you know, kind of what recession? We were already in a depression. You know, this is, it's a little worse, but then I began to see how much worse things were getting for so many people. And that could mean losing your job, of course, or maybe you've put things together with two or three jobs and you lose one or two of them, but that then you can no longer make rent and other payments, or you may have lost your home to some kind of dodgy mortgage. So those are some of the, you know, some kind of calamities that have been hitting to people who were already struggling before.
Why do you think the country has ignored this? Is it just that, I mean, many, many people, middle class, lower middle class, upper middle class, a lot of people have felt the knife edge in this recession. Are people just too concerned about their own circumstances to look down, look around?
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing to be concerned about your own circumstances, but I think this is a good moment for a lot of people who might have thought that poverty was some sort of bad lifestyle decision, or that poverty was comes about because of laziness or you know, bad choices, to think, hey, look, I had my master's degree, I had all this, all my ducks lined up, and now I'm struggling. Now I'm looking for food banks. And to have, you know, a sense that we're all connected in this somehow.
But you've looked around and seen not exactly an upwelling of empathy, but in fact, in many circumstances, a kind of aggressive or even cruel reaction to the poor trying to get by in really hard times.
Yes, and this was the big shock to me. It's not something I had ever thought too much about, but that, well, let me give you a concrete example. Is lots of cities have ordinances that say you can't sleep on the streets or sit down on the streets or, you know, do any sort of ordinary biological activities in the streets. And those have actually been stepped up since this recession. More ordinances in that direction. Now, that really hurts homeless people. It also hurts people who just, you know, look pretty, you know, indigent because of their conditions.
You've called it so the criminalization of poverty.
Right. And that's a phrase I first learned or first heard in Los Angeles from community organizers who, you know, we're talking about this whole issue of what's happening with the poor. They kept bringing this up. They said that levels of police harassment, which I will describe in a minute, mm-hmm. were actually increasing in low-income communities, meaning communities in they're mostly Latino in L.A. And that is that when you have very intense policing for very minor infractions like jaywalking, carrying an open container, littering, which can mean tapping your cigarette ashes onto the sidewalk in some instances, that this kind of policing does not go on in affluent parts of L.A. Or other cities, but it goes on in the poor parts and results in many fines for people.
You said that here we are in a deep recession, economic crisis, and we do less to help the poor and more to harass the poor. And you said, Barbara, not just the police, but society as a whole.
Well, yeah, here's something that really galls me, that now something like 47% of American employers require a credit check before they'll hire you. Now, think about that. Mm. If you've been out of a job for a while, mm-hmm. your credit rating has probably taken a little denting,
a beating,
right?
Yep.
But that means nobody wants to hire you. I mean, it's getting so that precludes you from being hired. And that, it seems to me, is a way of punishing people who are already slipping downwards. Just as, you know, when somebody can't make their monthly credit card payment in full or, you know, falls behind in that a little bit, suddenly they're confronted with a 30% interest rate and huge numbers of fees. So it's like once somebody starts to stumble, there's companies and government agencies out there ready to kick them.
Not help them, but kick them. Barbara, let me get a call right here, if I may, from Tullahoma, Tennessee. Tom, you're on the air with Barbara Ehrenreich.
Hi, Barbara. I did want to say I'm in a small town here in Tennessee that the working poor, or even really the non-working poor that can't even get a job, are having a really, really tough time. And employers, you know, have always, you know, we're in a right-to-work state. Well, there's no work. So they're put in this position where they've never gotten any benefits because of the propaganda of right to work, and they're in just the most difficult situation that you can imagine.
And do you see mm-hmm. the town, the community reaching out to help or turning their back, Tom?
I don't see the resources of people reaching out to help individually, you know, like I do and some other people, but I do not see it as a government effort. And one of the things that I do see is that most people consider it a government effort, so they don't do it themselves. And it's really hard to do that on an individual basis anyway.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for your call. Barbara, you've written that this crisis is to the country's social safety net what Katrina was to FEMA, kind of an exposing crisis.
Yeah, I think we should see that way. I mean, see it that way. Maybe now that we're told the recession is ebbing, though that has not affected ordinary people yet, mm-hmm. All right, let's do the body count now. What happened there? And it's pretty sad. Unemployment insurance, for example, only about 30 to 40% of the people who get laid off are eligible for it because there's such, you know, Byzantine eligibility requirements from state to state and even office to office. Then you don't have welfare anymore. You have what substituted for it, reformed welfare, which this is really ironic. It's temporary aid to needy families, but catch 22, you have to have a job to get the money. Mm-hmm. So think about that.
That's tough.
You know, it was designed, you know, in 1996 mm-hmm. when nobody apparently could imagine that there would ever be high unemployment. Mm. I think food stamps have been a huge help. That we've seen a lot more people turning to food stamps. And I think that a lot of, you know, private philanthropies and churches have done a lot through food banks and soup kitchens and so forth. But they will be the first to admit that they're pretty much maxed out.
Tom looks around at his town in Tennessee and sees it right in front of his nose. But you say we almost work hard to ignore it as a nation. Why do you think that is?
I think it's an old American habit. Let's either ignore the poor, pretend they're not there, or if they become visible for some reason, let's say it's their fault. You know, what's wrong with them? Why do they stay in these low-wage jobs? You know, why don't they just boost themselves up somehow? You know, there's a lot of that kind of very self-satisfied thinking often on the part of the affluent. And I think that kind of thinking should really be challenged now that so many people who had educations and were clearly hardworking citizens, et cetera, have fallen into hard times themselves.
And a lot of Americans in that situation, on the bottom rungs, you say in this country more than others, don't really raise a fuss when they're up against the wall.
It's hard. One huge problem is that a lot of people we're talking about are parents, and they're just, you know, struggling to try to hold things together and don't have enough time. But I wonder, instead of having a rally against health reform in Washington, D.C., like we had a couple of weeks ago, what would it be like if everybody who had been really hurt in this recession and not been able to find help, what if they rallied in D.C.?
Barbara, I have two women in the studio with me today that I want to introduce to our listeners and to you, if I may. First, Lucine Williams. She's a mother of two. She worked for 21 years and 11 months at a Hyatt Hotel in Boston on August 31st. She, along with about 100 hotel housekeepers there, were very suddenly let go and replaced with housekeepers making half the wages that she and others had, with zero benefits. Lucine Williams, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
And with us in the studio, Angela Norena. She worked at a Hyatt Hotel in Boston for 15 years until she was laid off just 3 weeks ago. Angela, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Barbara, let me let you say hi to these two fine women. You worked as a hotel housekeeper yourself when you worked on Nickel and Dime.
Yeah, very briefly. I'm very impressed that anyone could do it for 21 years or 15 years, because this does take a toll on your body, I would say. And I do want to hear more. This is just a shocking story of, you know, disrespect on the part of employers to just toss you away and say, well, we can get somebody to, you know, do it for half the pay, and we don't care if they can survive in Boston on that pay. And I know how they can, I just can't imagine.
Lucine, tell us the story of how this happened. Here we are, it's the end of August. You've been working there. You're 41 years old. You've got two children. You've been working at the Hyatt for 21 years and 11 months. This is not an easy job. You were making a decent, not a great wage, but $15 an hour with benefits, very important, because you have a son who has serious asthma, as I understand.
Yes, I do.
And what happened? How did it come about that suddenly you and about 100 others were out on the street and replacements were making half what you had made, $8 an hour, a tough wage in an expensive city like Boston? How did it happen? How did it unfold, Lucy?
Well, apparently we didn't see it coming. Mm-hmm. You know, as we went to work, they had a couple of signs around the hotel saying August 31st, Monday, they have a mandatory meeting for the housekeeping. And, you know, we were all quite nervous because we want to know what was going on, you know, because it said housekeeping only, you know. Mm-hmm. And what happened was when we went to the meeting, as we entered, they give us a number and told us sign the paper, and they give us a number for our table. After we got the number, we went and sit down. We couldn't go to the tables till after the GM had to say what he had to tell us.
Okay.
And with him walking around and footsieing around, we had an idea something was up. So after a while, one of the housekeepers got up and told him, just tell us what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And he said he's sorry, he regret that as of this moment, the housekeeping hourly people has been terminated.
All of you?
Yeah.
Nearly 100?
Yeah.
People cried. People screamed.
People start crying. You know, I was so shocked because it was so disheartening to me. And My friend, we went to the tables. My friend went and called her husband on the phone. You know, she didn't even know what to do. And when she called him, he didn't even believe her. She told him, okay, I'm going to let Lucine tell you. And I was crying. I said, Sam, you know, he said, Lucine, what happened? I said, they just got rid of all of us from the job. He said, you serious? I said, yeah. You know, meanwhile, I'm crying because it's so heartbreaking. You know, after working there so long, I give 21 years, 11 months. I give the hotel more of my time than I give to my children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a son with asthma, 13-year-old. You know, and
those health benefits were important for your family.
Exactly, those are very important because the insurance, the medication for the asthma is very expensive. You know, without the insurance, the out-of-air cost like $100-something alone.
They sent you to the ladies' locker room, and two ladies from the HR department stood and watched as you all took off, were asked to undress from your hotel uniforms, and they were waiting to take them, and out you go.
Yeah. The department head stood in the hallway as we came out. I don't know if they were acting as security or what, and they make sure we just exit the building. And you know, as we exit the building, people is in disbelief. They're really shocked. They're trying to find out what's going on. Why? What did I do wrong? And we're standing in front of the door trying to digest it. And here goes the security. He had the nerve to just stuck his head through the door and said, oh, they tell you guys not to stand in front of the door. And
move on.
Just don't stand in front of the door. Mm-hmm. You know, it's heartbreaking because going through the door 21 years, you know, we come like a family. We all there together. We sit down and laugh together.
You thought.
I thought. You know, I believe. You know, and to see how they treat us, you know, and to treat us to the fact that we help train these people and what we were training these people for to take our jobs.
You helped train your replacement with a kind of outsourcing firm who brought them in. And Angela, your replacements will make, you were there for what, like 15 years
yes,
or something?
Sir. Yes.
You also made about $15 an hour as a
16. Yes.
Good for you then. Your replacements will make half of that, $8 an hour.
Yes.
Is it possible to support a family in this city on $8 an hour with no benefits?
No, that's so sad. That's a sad point. We thinking too much about the people because it's double job for the people and it's so sad.
You're thinking about the people who replaced you, who will work in those jobs.
Yes.
Could your family get by with you making $8 an hour?
No, sir. That's too much for us. We can't do it. So that's why we are so sad about this one, about this question, about what Haya did for us. It's so sad. We never waiting for this point. We are spent in the Haya almost all my 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
So Haya for me was my second family, my second home.
And your income.
Yeah, and that the Haya did it for us. I don't want to remember anything, good things about Haya. Only I want to remember how they throw us. That's
out.
Out. That's so sad.
Angela Norena, Lucine Williams, Barbara Ehrenreich, there's a story, and suddenly we have two sets of people in front of us. The housekeepers like Lucine and Angela, out of work in a very tough economy with no income at the moment, other than whatever unemployment will come their way. And as Angela says, they're replacements who will make $8 an hour, half what they made, and no benefits. Talk about working poor. In this city, at least, there you've got it, Barbara.
Right. It's not possible to live on $8 an hour in Boston or in many places at all in this country. You know, it's interesting to me, Lucine and Angela, you reached out to a union, I know, Unite Here,
mm-hmm.
I believe, the Hotel Workers
That's
Union.
That's right.
For support.
They were not members, but that,
we were
that
not
union
members,
has come onto the scene
for help.
Since. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, if the next idea shouldn't be to try to organize those people who are your replacements, you know, into the union.
Doesn't
solve your immediate problem. But,
right, and the leverage of those people who are, you know, just brought in, that they're making $8 an hour.
Well, you would reach out to them and say, you know, you've been put in a terrible spot. you've been put in a spot where you've taken somebody's job, and you're getting, you know, a poverty-level wage. So we have to, you know, somehow stick together here.
But talk about a story of recession. I mean, in I don't know what you want to call it, fairness, reality, the hotel business has been bad. People are traveling less. It hasn't been boom times recently for the Hyatt hotel chain or many others. But here's an American story, Barbara, of people who weren't making a ton to begin with, now making nothing, and the replacements just really up against the wall.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, all over the country, I've talked to hotel workers, for example, and hotels take it out on their workers. Yes, the hotels are having trouble. In Indianapolis, I met with a group of hotel workers, and some of the housekeepers were telling me that they now have to clean many more rooms per day than they had to.
Lucine, is that true with your replacements? Do you know? Or you, before you were fired, let go?
That is what I heard. That is what I heard.
That they're up against a higher quota or a higher work demand.
Yeah.
How many rooms a day, do you know?
You know, I understood now they're cleaning the double the amount that we had, because we had 16. And I could imagine, I feel sad for them, because I had to clean 16 and I couldn't even finish 16. I can imagine the person cleaning 32.
Half the pay, twice the work.
Twice the work.
Let me get a call from
32 is unthinkable.
That's running. Let's go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Joe. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. What's up?
I just wanted to call and make a few comments. I'm unemployed now. I was fired from my mailroom position last week while I was in the hospital.
I'm sorry.
I went into the hospital with chest pains, and they kept me, admitted me, and I called my employer to tell them what had happened, and they told me that I had been in the hospital for so long that I had violated the attendance policy, so I was fired.
Well, how long were you in the hospital, Joe?
About a week.
Okay. And you're out of a job. What were you making?
I was making $11 an hour, which isn't much, but my wife was working too, paycheck to paycheck, just like a lot of Americans. I just, you know, capitalism is great. You know, free market is wonderful. I love this country. But to some extent, we just have a bunch of greedy people that aren't out for anything but making that extra dollar. You know, you make $10 million, that's not enough. You got to make $20 million. $20 million ain't enough. You got to make $100 million. And I think they're doing it on the backs of us American workers.
You certainly got Lucine and Angela nodding their heads in agreement with you right here, Joe. I mean, they've got rough experience just under their belt. What do you see coming? Do you see a change or more of the same? And what about you personally? What are you going to do?
It's sad, but I see more of the same, just because we have a lot of greedy people in this country. What I've done, I've filed for unemployment, I haven't heard back yet, but one of the things was that I violated the attendance policy by missing so many days. But I was in the hospital with chest pains, and, you know, I mean, I spoke with a boss about it, and he said, well, you know, if you lost a leg or something, we could discuss it. There might be some lenience there.
If you lost a leg.
If I would have lost a leg, it's like, my goodness, you know, it's just getting beyond, you know, I'm for everybody making a profit. I'm for everybody making money. That's wonderful. But to do it on the people that are making you that money, the whole system just seems out of whack.
Joe in Cedar Rapids, we wish you good luck, and we appreciate your call today. Joe, good luck there. Thanks for calling, Joe. Barbara, there's another story.
Well,
they roll in.
Well, one thing that you have to think in both of these cases is that one of the things that has to suffer is the quality of the work. You know, when you replace people who are well-paid, who know the work, I mean, talking about the hotel workers now, with people who they have just quickly trained and who are going to work, have twice as much work to do. If you know, I don't know if I would want to stay in a Hyatt hotel, you know, under those circumstances. And I think in Joe's case, too, you know, here's somebody who knew what he was doing, and a perfectly understandable thing happened to him for which he was punished. with unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm saying. And too often, instead of a hand being reached out, you know, to people who are suffering, they're slapped.
Lucine, how do you think about, in this case, Hyatt, and what happened with you? You worked there a long time. Now, they've got some problems. They haven't had the kind of hotel occupancy that they had before. But you're paying a big price here when you, presumably, I don't know if you've begun to look around at other jobs yet, but it's a tough job market out there all over.
Yeah.
Were they fair to you? Does fairness come into this?
I am choking up right now. It's very unfair, you know, and the hotels out there is not, they're not hiring anybody, you know.
Other hotels where you might have found employment.
Yeah.
They're not hiring.
They're not hiring. And, you know, the sad thing about it is that the Hyatt is not closed. Mm-hmm. The hotel is still open,
mm-hmm.
you know, but our jobs get to go to somebody else because of the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get to pay the price because, like the gentleman say, is you know, the greed, you know. And that you know, like I said, somebody need to say something, speak to somebody, you know, so that, because somebody got to get a wake-up call somewhere, you know, because if this continue go on, there'll be a lot more people outside on the street, you know?
Mm. Angela, have you thought about looking for another job or what you might do next? Have you begun to look around?
Yes, I'm looking around, but it's not easy to get now the job. It's not easy. The situation, the economy is not good for get a job. But I'm looking, but never we go to find something. They pay for us $16 for us.
That's what you made?
Yes.
That can you find that in your next job?
No, I know I can find it for the job. They pay for me the money of the, or maybe we can get the job with the good benefits. Right now, it's not easy.
And what about just making your payments? Do you have a house? Do you have a mortgage to pay?
Yes, I have mortgage to pay. I say thanks God because my husband, he's working. He's working, so I lucky. I say thanks God, but you know, my money, I lost my money, my check, that, so I know that it's going to make complete for us.
Not easy, Barbara. This is a world you know, and these two women are right in the middle of it now. I mean, they had found a wage they could get by on, and that's gone. And the replacements have one I'm not sure anybody can really get by on.
Well, I think there's a message here to working people. This kind of thing sends a signal and says, you're worth a lot less than you thought you were worth. And, you know, you're just going to have to accept a lot less. And no, you're probably not going to get the asthma treatments for your child. And no, you may not be able to hold on to your house and so on. That just, I think that we may come out of this recession. I hope we do come out of it officially, but with a lot deeper poverty in America.
Let me get a call from Charlotte, North Carolina. Adrian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say two things. One is here in Charlotte with social services agencies and nonprofit organizations
mm-hmm.
that help poor people. It's pretty much done in a Band-Aid approach. It's not straightforward, more aggressive, let's get this done. And furthermore, we have elected officials of both parties who are just ill-equipped to handle the oncoming social problems that stem from this recession.
Why do you think they're ill-equipped? Why? Why?
I feel that they're not speaking out they're just mainly not admitting that there is a social crisis. I mean, although we are a prosperous banking city, we got a lot of poverty, we got a lot of social stratification and other issues going on.
Yeah, and you're feeling it. Adrian, thanks very much for calling. Let me get a call from next door in South Carolina, Mark in Charleston. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling. I had a statement. I'd like to say something. When I was growing up, my father was the only one in the household who worked. We seemed to get along just fine back then with one income. My mom was a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems nowadays, my wife and I both have to work just to make ends meet. You know, we both have decent jobs. I'm a truck driver. She's an EMT with the county. But we both have to work just to make ends meet. And it seems as if, we don't even have the time to raise our own children anymore and instill the values in them that we want. All of our time is spent working just to make it. And we don't live extravagant. We have normal bills like anyone else. But it seems like we've lost something important, and it's detrimental to our family.
Well, we can hear that. And Mark, what if my guests here just saw their jobs taken and pushed down to half their wages? What if you or your wife saw your wages cut in half? What would it mean for your life?
Well, it would definitely be detrimental to us. I mean, we would have to make cuts, and we would get by and do what we'd have to do. But that would definitely be a downturn for us.
Mark, thanks for calling. Let me get one more right here, if I may. Thank you, Mark, from Mike in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Again, hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Look, one of the many things that bothers me about this economy is that the projections you hear and everything are roughly 10% unemployment, 1 in 10 people. But everybody that listens and knows it's quite a bit higher than that, and it's the projections are too that the job market's not going to come back until 2014, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no bright light on the horizon at the moment, and I mean these people that are unemployed, I've lost half my wages since the last 6 months, and it's been rough. But what are we going to do about all these people unemployed? It's probably closer to 1 out of 5.
When you say you've lost half your wages, Mike, do you mean you just had fewer hours to work, or your wages were actually cut in half?
No, sir. I'm a truck driver. I was driving over the road, and I'm driving local for about half the money.
Driving local for half the money now. Thanks for your call, Mike. Barbara Ehrenreich, this issue of the real employment rate, of course, we've got the sort of government rate, and everybody uses it as the yardstick. But you and Mike and others point out that if you look at the real employment rate, it's actually substantially larger if you really want to get into what's actually going on.
Yeah, there are two things that the unemployment rate doesn't tell us. One, it doesn't tell us about those people who have kind of given up looking for work because there's just nothing out there. And that's, I don't know what their estimates of that, but that's a large number. You can only, if you're in a certain size city or town, you can only, there are only so many jobs to apply for. Then the other thing that is left out of it is that all the people who, like Mike, have had seen a real cut in they're working, but they're really underemployed compared to what they were doing. So you're still going to work every day or driving a truck or whatever, but half the pay. That's underemployment compared to where you were.
It's certainly undercompensation compared to where you were. Let's go to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Devin. Devin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what do you think?
Well, my biggest thing is, we've kind of villainized these corporations and these companies that are doing everything and anything they can to stay in business. Often the largest cost a company has is their employment and their employees and their benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's either stay in business and cut some of those personnel and ask others to do more or cut wages or not stay in business and nobody has a job with those companies. So it's kind of a catch-22, but I don't think we should be villainizing all these companies for doing what they can to stay in business.
So when you look at the hotel story that's in front of us here, for example, Devin, you're feeling some sympathy with the corporate bosses trying to keep these hotels running.
Well, yes. I mean, I feel sympathy for the employees as well, obviously. I mean, you go from having a job to not having a job, and unfortunately that's the reality of today. I could not have my job tomorrow. But at the same time, it's either a handful or a few hundred employees have wages cut or an entire corporation goes out of business and you have hotels all over the country that are closed.
Devin,
well,
let us pick it up. Barbara? Yeah, Barbara?
Yeah, there is something to think about, though, in all sorts of corporations. I don't know the Hyatt story, but at the top, there have been ridiculously high levels of pay. I'm speaking of American corporations in general. Average CEO pay of about, you know, over $11 million dollars a year. You know, fantastic levels of executive compensation. We've seen it in even the banks that got bailouts, that they were giving each other fabulous bonuses with the government money. So before I'd say, oh yeah, let's stomp on the housekeepers or something, I'd say, what about executive compensation at Hyatt? Do we really need these people making hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars a year?
Lucine, how do you look at it? I mean, I'm looking here at some numbers saying that Boston area hotels, just for example, had a 21% drop in revenues per available room this summer. So their revenues are down. So is it fair for you? You know, our caller Devin says, well, look, the company has to do something. And labor is a big part. Housekeepers are probably the biggest part of a hotel's labor cost. But it's all fallen on you. How do you look at that?
Well, I think still it's unfair, you know, because like I said before, the hotel is still open. If it was that bad, they could have come up with a better strategy. They didn't have to kick us to the door and just because of the because they want to pay someone the minimum wage, do us like that. So I don't agree.
Do you think you were paid too much when you had the job there?
No, I don't think so at all, because to live in Massachusetts is very expensive. You know, and like I said, my son with the asthma, his medical is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thank God we had they had give us the insurance, because without the insurance, how are you gonna pay how am I gonna pay for the asthma care? I had to get the nebulizer for my son.
Mm-hmm. And that's not cheap.
No, it's not. That's the machine you hook up at the house. Mm-hmm. That's not cheap at all. You know, and my son got a bad latex allergy. The EpiPens alone, to get the EpiPen, thank God for the insurance, the co-payment I had to pay is $50 for EpiPen.
And when that insurance runs out?
And when that insurance runs out, how am I can afford to get them? How am I going to, if I don't try to go to, because they offer us Cobra, Cobra extended Cobra, or maybe city insurance, you know.
But Angela says she's looked around and is having trouble finding another $15, $16 an hour job. Have you begun to look, Lucine? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, I go online to fill application, but everybody is not responding because there are no jobs out there. There are no jobs out there.
Let's go to Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
Well, I tell you what, that last comment screamed public option, but that's another story for another day. This is something that I'm going to tell you, about maybe 8-9 months ago, in the middle of the real panicky, the world is about to end because of financial, everything's about to blow up. I never forget this. I was at a friend of mine barbershop, a guy that I know, he owns a barbershop. And it's not in the it's in a poor neighborhood here in Nashville. And I was at his barbershop, and a guy said, we were looking at CNN, and the guy said, you know, all those people with their masters and, you know, and they're just panicking because they're losing their 401Ks. And this is a guy that lives in the neighborhood. He looked at us, and he said, and you know what, to us around here, it's just Wednesday. And he walked out the door. And it was amazing how nonchalant and how cavalier. Well, he was like, it's just another day for us around here. They're struggling. And I believe that this time people are going to, unfortunately, because people with the master degrees and people that Bernie Madoff got money from and now they're poor again, those people are more visible to everyone. But the poor people are not visible, and I believe that things are going to get done for poverty in the United States, because before now, no one wanted to really admit, oh, they were lazy, or they don't want to do this, that, and the other. But now that, like you said, people with master degrees and richer people are now poor now, and now they're getting food stamps, they have friends that are still rich. Something is going to get done now. Unfortunately, it should have happened years ago.
Carl, thanks for your call. Barbara, Ehrenreich, Carl says it's going to be different this time because the pain's higher up the ladder. What do you say?
Well, I hope that's true. It's something certainly I'm working on, because you can see you're going to get lasting damage from some of these things, like losing your health insurance when your child has asthma. You know, what a lot of people have been doing is just giving up on medical care. They can't afford it. A third of Americans cannot afford to comply with their prescriptions anymore. That means, like, if you're older and you have blood pressure problems, you don't bother taking the blood pressure medication, or you skip days or something like that to save money. So what happens? You end up with a stroke in a hospital. These are irreversible, horrible things that happen to people because there was no safety net. There is no safety net for them now.
Let's go to Chris in Des Moines, Iowa. Chris, you're on the air. What are you hearing, Chris?
Well, I come from both sides. I've been an employee and an employer, and currently I'm an employer. My business is somewhere between, falls in the range of the $12 to $20 million a year.
Okay.
I have between 50 and 55 employees.
Mm-hmm.
When you break down the amount of hours that I put in, that I myself put in every week, I make less than $10 an hour, myself as the owner of the company. Now, my property taxes in the last 3 years have gone up 27%. My electric rate has gone up 19%. The gas rate, just for the business, has gone up between 19 and 20%. I pay out over $500,000 in premiums for my employees to have insurance. But according to the state, you know, I only get three companies to choose from. There are many, many, many other companies that I would like to be able to utilize because I could have lower, I could have as good insurance but lower rates. But I can't because the state does not allow them to sell insurance in this state.
So, Chris, where are you going with this? Are you saying if hard times come, you're going to have to lay people off, and that's just too bad?
I've had to let people go because when I got to raise my prices. Well, if I'm raising my prices and you know, to cover the cost, raise my prices for what I sell, you know, then I run the risk of my customers going to the big box.
But at least you're building some equity in your business, we hope, for your sake, Chris. But the employees, if you let them go or cut their wages in half, what are they supposed to do in this economy?
Like I said, at this point, for the amount of hours that I put in, by the time the year is done, I make less than $10 an hour. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah. Bad economy. We hear it. We hear it loud and clear, Chris. I want to get one more call. Matthew, Nashville, you're on the air, Matthew.
Hello, Tom.
Hello.
As a customer of that Hyatt Hotel in the past, I want to say on behalf of customers, thank you to those two women for their years of service. Even if Hyatt has been a brute in this action, customers, thank you. And also, customers should show their outrage to Hyatt. That's one of the wealthiest families in the nation. This is an outrageous case, and Hyatt should hear from the customers. Thank you.
Matthew, thanks for calling. Lucine Williams, does it make you feel better when you hear somebody like Matthew calling in saying thanks and saying no thanks to the employer who let you go? Or
yeah. It's very good to hear him say that, you know, at least the customers think more of us now, you know, than the Hyatt itself, you know, because when you treat people like that, it's very hurtful, you know. It is. I don't know how the management at Hyatt lay down at night and sleep, you know, and think. Because, you know, we have so much families. We got rent to pay, you know, credit card bills, light bill, phone bill.
Angela, do you worry at night now?
Yes. Do you worry?
And your husband?
Yes. We are so sad.
Barbara, where do we go here? Just wait for the rebound in the economy and hope that things get better?
No, I kind of agree with the last caller, Matthew, that we should all find ways to exert pressure. To say that the kind of behavior that, you know, was evidenced just now by Hyatt is unacceptable. I don't know if anybody's calling for a boycott of Hyatt, but at least it seems to me that if you are a guest there, you know, they have a little comment page, you should leave them a little comment and then say that this really makes you mad, what they did to the housekeepers, because it's the housekeepers that made your stay pleasant and clean and comfortable.
Well, Barbara Ehrenreich, it's always great to have you with us, and we're glad for the time to raise up even these hard stories of you, Lucine Williams, and you, Angela Lorena. We wish you very good luck on the other side of this hard hit. Barbara, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.